Shields up, red alert. Spoilers decloaking off the starboard bow. Yeah, that was a warning.
I just want to preface this. That sounds wrong. Preface. Is that how you say it? Preface. I just want to preface. That sounds really silly. And I'm seeing it P-R-E-F-I-S-S in my head. And you're not allowed to edit any of this out. This is who I am. I am not ashamed.
Anomaly. Something that deviates from what is standard, normal, or expected. An oddity, peculiarity, irregularity, inconsistency, incongruity, a rarity.
I have been a nerd since long before I could have heard that bookish girls should look and act a certain way. And I'll still be a geek when I am utterly antique, because I do not care what normal people say.
Hi, welcome to Anomaly Supplemental, Babylon 5, Season 5, Part 2. My review. And yes, that is the best intro that I could come up with after doing it 4 or 5 times. I'm pretty sure I always do the intro like 4 or 5 times and it always sounds really terrible, and then I usually just end up going with the most vanilla opening ever. I just want to preface this by saying that because this season was so unusual for me and hard to wrap my brain around, this episode will probably take on more of like a stream of consciousness, where I'm kind of just remarking on this last half of the season as my brain kind of runs through each thing that happened, touches on any highlights that are highlighted in my brain. So I do apologize if it's hard to follow, but hopefully it'll still be enjoyable. But I just wanted to let you know that's the type of show it is, so hopefully you enjoy it. So, recently finished up the last few episodes of Season 5. Feeling a little overwhelmed, because, once again, this will probably sound like an insult, but I don't mean it to be. The last half was almost even more directionless in a way than the first half. So it's almost like it's just all kind of swimming around in my brain, mostly as character moments. And so I'm not really sure where to begin. So forgive me and just bear with me as I try and navigate through these last few episodes with you. One thing that I was thinking might help me along is we got a listener letter, which was really exciting, from Gerald Hicks. Let me just say, Gerald, thank you so much for writing, because, I mean, any podcast will tell you, honestly, getting letters from listeners is pretty much a super huge highlight. Just knowing someone's listening is a big deal. So thank you so much. Hey, longtime listener, first time emailer. I found your podcast through Treks and Sci-Fi. I've been following the Babylon 5 series from Sarah, among many others of your podcasts. This has been one of my favorite series, and I've watched the entire 5 seasons 3 times over the years. Haven't watched in a while, so it has been fun reliving this from the podcast. Some of my thoughts. I disagree with Sheldon from Big Bang. It's not derivative. Actually, the writers decided he should not like some sci-fi show and chose Babylon 5. They could not pick a Star Trek series. Speaking of Star Trek, I still believe Deep Space Nine was created from the Babylon 5 concept. There's a lot of internet buzz on this. Jeffrey Sinclair was okay for season 1, but Bruce Boxleitner rocked as Sheridan. I have to agree. As speaking as Sarah, not as Jerry, I agree with you, Jerry. Sinclair was very weird. I mean, not in a bad way necessarily, but not in a... He's not as dynamic as Bruce Boxleitner, I think. Back to Jerry's letter. The story arc through season 4 was awesome, but they still managed to do character-driven stories. There are many good ones. I enjoyed the episode The Core is Mother, The Core is Father, which is one I just actually finished watching an episode. Look for the subliminal messages during this episode. Hey, I said subliminal right. That was Sarah again, sorry. Walter Koenig was great as Bester. I enjoyed the Londo Jakar story through the entire run. Andreas Katsoulis was fantastic as Jakar and in his Star Trek roles. I liked Londo. He was devious, untrustworthy, but he did struggle to do the right thing. His maneuvering of events to remove the Emperor is a good example. Veer being Londo's conscience was a help. I remember Veer telling the one Centauri bad guy, "I will see your head on a pole and I will wave at it," and Veer did. You talked about Leda on the recent Season 5, Part 1. I believe the Vorlons made her a telepath beyond the rating of a 12. I was always hoping she would do a Bester smackdown. I think the Vorlons are one of the coolest aliens conceived for TV. Bill, I believe it's Bill Mummy. I think that's how you say it. I'm guessing it's not Bill Mummy. I don't know. His Lanier got shortchanged at the end of the series. And speaking of Sarah, can I just give that a resounding heck yes? I will get into that later. On a side note, Bill is one of the best convention guests I've ever seen. He tells a story that while on the set of Alfred Hitchcock's series, Hitchcock threatened to nail his shoes to the floor. Bill was 7 and had been fidgeting. A note about the music, Christopher Frank was a member of Tangerine Dream, a German electronic music group. I've collected many of their CDs. And note to Sarah, that's really cool. I did not realize that. I'm very familiar with Tangerine Dream, as one of their more familiar things would be. There are certain versions of Legend, the Tom Cruise movie that uses the score for Tangerine Dream, and then other versions that use the Jerry Goldsmith. I actually like both. Back to Jerry's letter. I look forward to Season 5, Part 2. Keep up the good work. Thanks, Jerry. I'm a singularity, he says. So thank you again, Jerry, and really enjoyed your letter and enjoyed your hearing your thoughts on the series. I have to say, it's been kind of weird because as I've been watching this Season 5, I've actually been watching through Deep Space Nine in its entirety. I've always been a big Deep Space Nine fan. I just have never actually seen the entire series. It's one of those hard things where I feel a real conflict because it does kind of feel almost like you can't be a Deep Space Nine fan and a Babylon 5 fan. Or you can, but it's like you'll always kind of feel bad for being a Deep Space Nine fan. Especially, you know, when you read the stuff about, you know, what happened with J. Michael Straczynski and everything. And, you know, maybe some people don't believe it. I personally kind of lean towards thinking, yeah, I think he got screwed over and they stole his idea. So the one interesting thing that me and my husband were talking about while we've been watching both of them is a theme that a lot of sci-fi seem to go through and use is allusions to different aspects of World War II throughout Babylon 5 and Deep Space Nine. And they've been more noticeable as we've been watching them side by side and everything. That said, my initial point was watching them side by side. Yeah, there's a definite noticeable drop in special effects quality when you watch Deep Space Nine compared to Babylon 5. Babylon 5's graphics and special effects kind of all stayed about the same level of looking like really, 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 really like early, like almost 80s CG. But that said, it's like that's not what's important, and it's definitely one of those shows where they definitely have a lot going for them story-wise and character-wise. And I think they did the best job with what they had that they could. So I definitely respect the series, Babylon 5, you know, for standing on its own. And, you know, it doesn't really lean on the graphics as much. And not like I'm saying Deep Space Nine does, because I actually really like Deep Space Nine too. I'm just saying, I think in their own rights, both the shows are really great and really quality shows. Getting back to Season 5, one thing, you know, everything kind of just comes to a head. And it's like, I was really disappointed because I think I was expecting or hoping all this time that the future with Londo kind of being a slave to the Keeper and then, you know, Jakar strangling him and Londo strangling him back and they both just die together and, you know, Centauri getting shot to heck and all the different stuff, the stuff that we saw in the future, I was just really expecting them to reverse that somehow. But it just never happened. It really did just set itself up to end that way. And it was kind of really disappointing and just felt like, I don't know, it felt like a missed opportunity to me. But, I mean, they knew what they were going for, and that's not what they wanted to do. Oh, one thing I forgot to mention. With Londo kind of like finally being like, okay, the regent dies and he becomes emperor and everything, kind of accepts his fate willingly, not willingly, kind of like, I don't really have a choice. There was this whole, like, random story. I mean, once again, they knew they were going to end, so I don't understand. Like, he goes to visit Delenn and Sheridan on Mimbar, and he gives them, like, this vase thing for their son because, oh, that was one thing that, you obviously saw coming because you saw they had a son in the future. And he says for their son, and Sheridan's like, it's sealed on the bottom. He's like, oh, yeah, apparently it contains water that ran past our first palace and everything. You're supposed to give it to him when he comes of age. And then the camera goes inside of the vase, and there's a keeper inside of it. And you're like, what the heck? And, like, that was stressing me out. And it was like, you assume when you get to Sleeping in Light, the last episode, that they figured out a way to get past that and thwart it. But at the same time, their son, David, is supposed to only be 19. And it was one of those things where Londo was like, give it to him when he's 16 or whenever coming of age is. And Sheridan mentioned coming of age being 21. So you're like, well, either nothing happened with that or something's still about to happen with it. And they get to figure it out with his dad. So I don't know, but that was random too, that they would just throw that like random thread in and not really have any intention of resolving it. I don't know. That was just weird to me. I think my biggest issue with this season was I felt like they kind of showed everything. Like they showed how everything ended. It's kind of like they took it to the end. And I don't know, maybe some fans like seeing things come full circle and seeing, like, someone, at the beginning of the show and then go all the way to the end and then they die. And it's like, or this happens and it's the end. Or they're not going to be the captain of this ship anymore. Or this. And it's like, I always prefer open endings where it's almost like, it's a really satisfying ending, but they could still be going on. They could still be having adventures now. You don't know. Like, one of my best favorite examples of a perfect ending is, like, the ending to Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade. It's like, that's a really satisfying, really awesome ending. And it ends with you being like, and they go off to have many other adventures. And it's like, I like those endings. I don't really want to know how people die. I don't really want to know that, 12 years after this, Garibaldi drank himself into a stupor and was killed by a falling desk. I mean, that didn't actually happen. But you know what I'm saying? It's like, I feel like a lot of people really want almost closure of the characters, knowing what happened to them. But it's like, I like relying on my imagination and being like, they could still be doing cool stuff right now. They could still be exploring the galaxy. They could still be doing this and this. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the end of Star Trek VI Undiscovered Huntress depresses me. Because I'm like, I hate that, like, well, they're going to go and the ship's going to be decommissioned. And then they're all going to go their separate ways. And it's really depressing. And it's like, even though it's a great movie, it's like, ugh. So that was one of my biggest complaints. Because the last episode, Sleeping in Light, which I'm really leaping to the end here. Spoiler alert, if you don't already know, it's Sheridan dying, going off to die, and kind of all his friends talking with him one last time. It was kind of cool seeing Claudia Christian come back. I wasn't expecting that. It's interesting watching the episode knowing it was meant for the end of season 4 before they realized they were going to be renewed for season 5. And I probably have brought this up a million times, but you really can tell that season 5 was, the writers were like, well, we thought we were going to be done. We don't really know where to go after this. It reminded me a lot of Stargate, SG-1, how that was like a really awesome show. Personally, one of my favorites. It's like, if you've never seen that show, man, that is an awesome show. But personally, I thought it kind of took a downward spiral after the gold got taken care of. And then it was about, what were they called? I can't remember what the new enemy was called. But when it was about them instead, they got a whole new enemy. And It just wasn't as good. And I feel like it's because the writer's room was like, I remember reading that they didn't even realize they were going to get renewed, and they kind of were wrapping things up, and the same thing happened where they're like, okay, now we have to make up a new enemy and figure out what the season's going to be about, because we had no idea. I felt like there were a lot of loose ends that never got tied up. Like, Lita, for one, I mean, basically, they were writing her to be one of the most interesting characters in a lot of series that you would have ever seen, with all her crazy powers, and she all of a sudden started kind of becoming more and more psycho in her quest to probably justify Byron's death, and got to this point where you're just like, what kind of a person is she going to be? She's got all this anger that she's been used, and, you know, honestly, she's so right. Like, everyone is always using her. No one really wanted to know her for herself. It's like, that character was crapped on, like so many times, and she kind of had a right to be really angry. Maybe not the best thing to be really angry and, like, killing people indiscriminately or using your powers for evil, but I'm just saying, I understood. But anyway, I mean, they kind of built her up and were like, oh, she's becoming even more powerful. And then in the end, it's like, oh, we don't really know what to do with her. So Jakar's like, okay, since this book I wrote got published and everybody is kind of worshiping me and I don't want that, which I have to say was a really cool part. I like that he was like, okay, this is not about me. You know, you should just be reading what I'm writing and not basically bowing down to me and making me into an idol. So he decides he's got to leave because all his followers, quote unquote, are kind of making trouble on Babylon 5. So he says, well, why don't we travel? Why don't we leave? And Lita can come with me. And he asks her if she wants to come with him, which, I mean, that's kind of a cool concept. I liked thinking about, you know, their travels together. And I feel like that could make a really cool book series of, you know, the things they saw and kind of the things he taught her. And, you know, I liked, there was this one line where she was talking to him about, basically they'd made a deal where if he gave her money, like a lot of money, because she needed it for all the telepaths, then she would finally actually give him the DNA he needed to try and make Narn telepaths, which was interesting, the hearkening back to the scene they had in the first season where he was saying that the Narn had no telepaths.
Beats being stuck here. So I appreciate the offer, even though I know this isn't entirely for my benefit.
I don't know what you're...
Sikar, come on. I'm essentially, you're getting your hands on telepath DNA. You have a vested interest in staying close to me.
That's why you think I'm doing this. Just that, my own personal interest.
Well, yeah.
Then my decision was even more correct than I had imagined.
You can tell he really does want to help her and really does want to get through to her through all this, like, pain and all this, these feelings of being used that she has. But yeah, that's kind of the only wrap-up we get for her. I mean, we obviously know what happens to Jakar because of the glimpse in the future. Delenn and Sheridan, obviously, they, you know, they kind of just progress like you'd expect. And I feel like there wasn't much more to their story that could be told. Obviously, in the Sleeping in Light episode, it was all about her coming to grips with the fact that she was going to lose him. And I feel like that was a really well acted out episode because she really, you know, did seem terrified. They had this one scene where he was going to, you know, he knew it was really close to time and he was just going to leave and go into space and kind of die there. Not really in so many words was he explaining that, but she understood what he was saying.
Do you know what tomorrow is? In Earth time, I mean. Sunday. When I was a kid, every Sunday, Dad would take us out for a drive. We never knew where we were going. That was half the fun. We'd just go. He'd say, pick a direction. And one of us would point, and off we'd go. Tomorrow is Sunday, Delenn. And I'm going out for a drive.
Just them, you know, hugging each other for the last time and how scared she looked knowing she was never going to see him again. And it was just, wow. It was a really, really, really depressing scene. And they played it really well. But once again, something I could have gone my entire life without seeing because, yeah. I'm not really one of those people who's like, oh, it was so depressing. That was so beautiful. Like, people who watch Titanic over and over again so that they can have a good cry. I'm like, I don't watch movies or shows so I can cry. I mean, I'm not making fun of you. I just, if you're like that, but I'm just never been one of those people who's like, I loved it. It was so sad. Like personally, that's why I'll never watch The Notebook because I heard it's absolutely depressing and it ends really depressing. And I don't need that in my life. You know, there's already enough things that I cry about in real life. I don't need to cry when I'm watching a TV show or a movie. So, all that to say, I feel like there wasn't much furthering for their characters, and they kind of just fell more in love, and then their story ended there. Lynn Yeater, on the other hand, just seemed like he fell more and more in love with Delenn, and Delenn was totally clueless, and Delenn kept on touching him, like touching his face, and touching his shoulder, touching his hand, and being like, oh, and blah, 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 and oh, why are you blah? And, you know, I was just like, Delenn, are you that clueless? Like, you're making this so much harder on him, poor kid. And it's like, she just really handled it bad. But it was just like, I felt offended for that character because, you know, he became a ranger to prove himself, to kind of be the man she would have chosen, is what he said. But basically, it culminated in Sheridan got locked in this room where he was going to like immediately die if he wasn't going to be let out, and Lanier didn't open the door, and Sheridan saw him not open the door, and Sheridan saw him leave, and then Sheridan ended up like breaking the door so he could get out. But it was like, you know, Lanier was like just about to commit to it, but then he's like, oh, I can't do this, and he turned back. But by that time, Sheridan was already out, and it was kind of like really awkward and horrible and horrifying because you're like, you can't really come back from that. And he didn't, because he ran and got in one of those little spaceships and flew away while Delenn's talking to him, trying to convince him to come back, saying, we can talk this through. And I'm kind of like saying, no, you really probably can't, because where do you go from there? You can't really say, I'm sorry that I tried to kill your husband, and then have everything be okay. I mean, in a perfect world you could, but like that would be kind of really hard, you know? So it kind of ends with her and him talking and him saying, you know, one day I'll earn your forgiveness, which sounded kind of psycho. And, you know, him saying he's sorry and tell Sheridan I said I'm sorry and everything. But it just felt like here's the interesting thing. There were so many random story elements to this last half that it almost felt really true to real life, because stuff that happens in real life doesn't really have a rhyme or reason. And sometimes things just happen and you're like, why the heck did that just happen? And you have no idea. So, like I said, I'm kind of torn because it's interesting writing in that sometimes things just happen and they don't get resolved and it could be realistic. But I didn't really like it because it just felt like I really liked that character and it felt so incomplete and random and weird. I did like that as they continued with the Garibaldi drinking and everything, that they kind of did use it kind of to make him come to his lowest point and have his friends rally around him and then have Lise, you know, there to support him and everything. But I felt like it was so weird because everybody kept on being like, oh yeah, I kind of suspected that you were an alcoholic again. You were starting to drink again. Well, I was giving you all these jobs in which you were responsible for multiple people's lives. It's like, if you were really suspecting that, perhaps we shouldn't have given him jobs where people's lives depended on it. If you really suspected him of drinking again to like affecting his judgment. But hey, it all worked out and, You know, I really like that him and Lise ended up getting married and moving back to Mars. He definitely seemed like he'd kind of grown past Babylon 5. And I like a lot that number one from, if you remember, an episode way back in season 4, I guess. Her and Franklin were kind of an item on Mars. And I really like that she came to take over his position on Babylon 5, the station. That was actually, I forget what episode it was. Maybe Objects in Motion or Objects at Rest. I'm not sure. Where Sheridan and Delenn are finally leaving Babylon 5 to go to Minbar. And I liked the scene as they're pulling away and they kind of were leaving the new crew there. You know, there was the woman that Franklin had asked to take over his job. And there's number one who, they said her name, I think her name was Tessa. You know, and Lockley and everything. And I did like that. That was kind of, I liked the idea of them passing things along to the new guard, like passing of the guard kind of thing. The only thing that kind of made that not mean as much for me was Sleeping in Light, where it was kind of like, well, Babylon 5, the station, was decommissioned not so long after. And that's kind of, I don't know. When I kind of know how things end, then I'm like, oh, well, then there's that whole scene, and that means that didn't last that long, you know? It's probably really bratty of me, and I totally admit that, but it was just kind of like, it kind of ruined that scene for me a little bit. Speaking of Lockley, I was just really surprised that they really did end up just seeming like they were doing nothing really with that character. She really, I guess when you bring a new character into the last season, there's not really much you can do. I felt like they probably rounded out her character as much as they possibly could with the time that they had. But it really was surprising that, I don't know, that she didn't feel as integral to the show as I was expecting. She didn't feel as part of the show as I was expecting. That said, I didn't dislike her character and would have been interested in seeing where she would have gone in future episodes. I'm not sure whether she's in any of the movies or not. I haven't really done any research into the movies at all, so I'm not really sure what happens and what bearing it has on the series. It just felt a lot like the series was for kind of wrapping things up and getting characters saying goodbye. And there was a great scene with Delenn and Jakar saying goodbye that I really liked. I thought it was really well done and it felt very heartfelt. One thing, I'm all over the place, so please forgive me, but one thing that I expected them to kind of sew up was the whole thing between Leda and Garibaldi, where she was like, okay, I'll take away, because Bester made there be a neural block. I think I talked about this in the first part, but I'm not sure. But a neural block so that Garibaldi could never kill him. And he was saying, oh, well, Leda, you're a giantly powerful telepath, you can remove that so I can get my revenge on Bester. And she's like, okay, if you raise up basically an army for me in 2 years, I guess she's guessing she's only going to be away with Jakar for 2 years, then I'll do that for you. Franklin, as usual, felt like he got shortchanged, like you said, like usual. I mean, he got a lot of good screen time and everything, and they talked about where he was going and what he was doing. But I don't know. He still felt like a very underutilized character to me. And I really would have liked to have seen him more. I did really enjoy seeing him and Garibaldi still being friends in the last episode, even when they were a lot older. I liked that the friendship lasted. I liked seeing Garibaldi having kids. Well, a kid, a daughter. It was definitely interesting seeing, you know, Veer. Veer was kind of funny. There are a lot of more comical moments with Veer as Emperor because apparently, you know, he ended up taking over Londo's job when Londo ended up getting killed. Yeah, overall, I mean, there are a lot of little moments and stuff that it just felt like it was almost like the purpose of the season. I try to just look at it as gleaning kind of character moments, character gems, getting little glimpses of character depth. Because honestly, and I really don't mean this in a mean way, but season 5 just felt aimless beyond that. It felt like it was worthwhile for maybe the one or two lines that expanded a character or made you see more of what they were about or made you understand them more or made you understand a storyline from earlier, but that there really was no value to it for me beyond that. It felt very aimless and meandering, and just it felt rudderless and out of control and like a potpourri of different ideas and fancies and little story bits that were thrown in that were tempting and interesting but didn't actually lead anywhere. Like I said, unless the movies go further into some of the things that felt like they were left unsaid. One thing I didn't mention was it was interesting they changed the theme song for this last season, and I really didn't like it at first, but it definitely grew on me. And I did like that it was less like serious. It was more of a triumphant kind of uplifting kind of sound. But yeah, the season felt like what it was. That it was a season where the writers didn't realize that they were going to have to write more and kind of had written themselves out of storylines. And it just kind of felt like, and let me preface this, what I'm going about to say, with saying that I really did genuinely, and I think I said this before, start to care for all the characters, like them and enjoy them very much. And I just felt like this last season, for me, kind of left so many of them out in the cold, or kind of sabotaged them, or felt like they weren't as important, or just did things that I didn't really like, or I saw things I didn't want to see, or, you know, it does tie into my I don't really want to know how everyone dies. Spoiler alert, if you watch Inspector Morse, like I was reading, I don't know if they actually do it in the last mystery that they do with John Thal, but I was just reading that he dies in the last mystery, and major spoiler alert, Poirot dies in the last mystery, and it's just like, I don't want to see that. Like, I don't want to know how the character dies. That's never been something I want to see. I mean, that's fine if you're that type of person, but I mean, I hear if it is, then Game of Thrones is a show for you, but like, but I like imagining that the characters have a life beyond the show. I think that's the thing. I usually, when the show I like, I progress storylines. I imagine storylines for the characters when the show's over. I imagine things going on. I wonder, you know, what they did after that, this and this. And I just felt like a lot of these shows kind of cut that freedom free for me, where I can't, because the end has already been told. It's an open and shut story. It's the end. There's no expansion you can even do. And, you know, it might not be like that for other people, but for me, it felt disappointing that for a lot of the characters, not all of them, it kind of felt like, well, where can they go after this? I mean, that said, Sheridan's like the only one that, well, besides Jakar and Londa, who are like, Jakar's my favorite character in the whole world. But it just felt like, and Babylon 5 itself is decommissioned and over, and then they exploded, and it's just like, I don't know. It was just, overall, season 5 was very disappointing for me. I almost kind of wish I'd never seen it, quite frankly. I think I would have been fine not seeing it, but at the same time, like I said, Jakar is one of my favorite characters ever, so more screen time for him is always a good thing, but you know, even him as a character, I felt like he didn't have much to do in this season either. It just, no one really did. It just, I was disappointed. I didn't really like this as a send-off. I have come to really like and admire a lot of the characters, and I just felt like it didn't do any of them justice. I feel like there's hardly anyone it did justice in my eyes, personally. So yeah, those are my thoughts on this last half of season 5. It's been a very interesting watching all of them, thinking about how much the characters have changed and
Well, even how much my life has changed since I started watching this show and started doing the reviews. So I definitely am glad I started the series. I like the series. It's possible one day, a while from now, I might want to watch it over again. The series as a whole is definitely worthwhile, and I definitely do understand people's intense affection for it. So yeah, I'm really glad that I got to take this journey. I'm glad that there's so many listeners who kept listening and wanted to take it with me. And I just thank you again for listening. And once again, if you have any questions, comments, or you can do complaints, just be nice because I cry easily. Then please send them to moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. As always, every podcast is definitely happy and excited to hear from their listeners. So never underestimate just a little comment or a little note. You know, you might think, oh, I just would write and say, I like your show. They've probably heard that a million times. Believe me, most podcasts don't get as much fan mail as they wish they did. So just for future episodes of Anomaly, you know, with my awesome friends Casey and Sue, just keep that in mind. Remember, you know, no note is too small. It always means a lot to podcasters to know there really is someone listening. So thank you again, Jerry. And thank you again. I don't think I ever read your letter, but Devin, my friend Devin Cox, actually wrote a letter way back when to me about, I think it was season one or season two. And I just thank you both for taking the time to write. And I'm going to stop saying thank you because I think I've said it a million times. But thank you again for taking the time to listen. It really means a lot. Signing off for now.
I'll miss you.
Unnecessary. You see, I believe that when we leave a place, part of it goes with us, and part of us remains. Go anywhere in the station when it is quiet and just listen. After a while, you will hear the echoes of all our conversations, every thought and word we've exchanged. Long after we are gone, our voices will linger in these walls for as long as this place remains. But I will admit that the part of me that is going will very much miss the part of you that is staying.
All the cool kids keep enthusiasm rationed, right down to the last explosive ounce. But I'd rather indulge my many passions, even if my squaritude's a little too pronounced. Perhaps I do not strike you as a geek.
If you wish to contact the Anomaly Supplemental, you can at the email address, which is moregirlygeeks@gmail.com. That's girlygeeks with a Z at gmail.com. Or if you like hearing the sound of your own voice, like I do, you can call the voicemail line at 248-419-GEEK. Yes, it's one of those numbers that you can use alphabets on, and that's 248-419-4335. To stay up to date with Anomaly and Anomaly Supplemental News, you can follow them on Twitter at Anomaly Podcast. That's the at symbol, A-N-O-M-A-L-Y podcast. Check out the Anomaly blog for geeky articles and Anomaly supplemental show notes. Find it online at anomalypodcast.com. That's A-N-O-M-A-L-Y-podcast.com. Theme music is used by permission of Marion Call. Thank you, Marion. Find out more at mariancall.com. Or, of course, you can follow her on Twitter at Marion Call. That's M-A-R-I-A-N-C-A-L-L. Anomaly was created under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 3.0 Unported License. Say that three times fast.
The world is much too interesting to entertain ennui, and I won't ever play it cool, so I won't ever once be bored. Oh, I have been a nerd since long before anyone heard that fair and scrawny was the latest fashion trend. And I still be a geek after nobody thinks it's chic, because I don't require approval.
But it's funny because you come to expect things to get resolved or to mean something in a TV show. So when they don't, it's really annoying with that. My neighbor is revving his motorcycle. He always does that. Oh, gosh, that's so annoying.